Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to The Fringe of It,
episode number 42.
Hello.
Hi. I feel like we should always record the conversation we have before we record the podcast.
Minus the swears and the moans.
Few swears, few moans, but I always feel like we just kind of pop on to, you know, check the lines working, and then we, like, I don't know, we just kind of offload, and then I go, that would have been really interesting for the podcast.
I know, that's the thing. I think that, and then I actually relay what we were talking about, and I think most of it people would have gone, how self-indulgent.
Yeah, it was very sweary as well. I got all my F's and Jeff's out before the podcast.
And it's just to really let go of those, otherwise, heaven forbid,
this would be an 18, not a PG. Yeah.
Can you imagine stumbling across us in the adult section? What is this? How rude could it possibly be?
Yeah, really not that rude. Anyway, how are you, Liv?
I'm all right, thank you. I'm okay. I feel like I've had I had a really calm week in the diary, and it's just, I feel like I've not stopped and I've still not got everything I need to get done. Obviously, this is going up a little bit later than anticipated because we've both been here and there and everywhere this week. I was in Brighton.
In our defence, we did record this earlier on in the week and then it crashed, remember?
That is very true. Yeah, so we went to record this on, was it Monday?
Yeah, it's now Friday.
It was Monday, so our original recording day, where in which case this would be up on time. And it crashed. We lost everything. And we just thought, no.
We just gave up, didn't we? Well, we had been chatting for ages and all of a sudden it just went, no.
I know. And you just can't force this kind of chemistry.
Yeah. Tell me about Brighton.
So Brighton was lovely. I went down on a press trip, but it was absolutely gorgeous. I haven't been to Brighton in so long, and I keep wanting to go back. And it's just, it hadn't popped up. Me and Joe were going to go a couple of weekends ago, and then a couple of things got in the way. And then, so it was just really lovely. I was with Carrie, and we extended our trip because it was really just meant to be a one night thing. But we hung around all the next day and just went around some really, really gorgeous shops. And just, it was just really nice. The sun came out for us. It wasn't too windy, which I feel like never happens when I'm in Brighton. So I could walk along the beach.
Yeah, windy city.
I know. And I could just, my hair looked normal. Amazing.
I feel like every picture of me in Brighton is just my hair.
And two eyes poking out.
I love Brighton. Jack and I and June went probably this time last year, but it was scorchio.
Oh, I remember that, because I remember seeing your photos on Instagram and I saw the sunset and I just thought, oh, it was a sexy photo. It was so beautiful. I was just like, that to me sums up everything great about the seaside.
Yeah, I kind of don't want to go back now in case it isn't as good as that trip, because that trip was perfect.
Yeah, that's how I feel about Cornwall. Like, that is one of my favourite places. And when I went last time, it was so perfect that I'm like, oh. But you almost just have to go back before you overthink it. Otherwise, you'll never go.
Why are we like this?
I don't know. We're too sentimental. But one of my favourite shops is actually called Our Daily Edit. And I went into there and I hadn't been in there. And honestly, their curation of brands is unrivaled.
Is that where the blue daisy dress was?
That's where the blue daisy dress was. I just went in there and they have, like, I can't even think off the top of my head now, which is useless, but they have like MIH, they just have loads of really brilliant, like Ganni, like young independent designers. I know Ganni's quite popular now, but just really cool brands, like all in colour order and like one piece of each. Obviously, they've got like a size variety in the back, but it was just so beautifully styled. And there's a brand that I saw who I know Brittany wears all the time called Mr. Larkin. And I saw this dress and it was like a blue kind of midi to full length dress with a bit of peplum, and it had like a V-neck and puff sleeves, and it was covered in daisies, and I fell hard.
I'd seen Brittany wear a dress on her stories. I sent her like 4,000 emojis with the love heart eyes, and then I followed. Is it Mr. or Mrs. Larkin?
Just Mr. They're not married.
What was it called? The Darling Buds of May. They were the Larkins, anyway. Grandma Diverses. And then I followed them. Then I saw the dress. Then I saw you on the dress. And oh, honestly, I've been hysterical this side of the internet. Hysterical. Oh,
so good. So good.
So, I'm glad you bought it, because I wasn't really sure if you'd bought it from the Instagram stories. And I was like, I need more information.
I did. I must say, like, the pieces aren't cheap. They are kind of like...
It looked well made.
It was beautiful. And I justified it by thinking, like, I'm not someone that kind of does huge, big hauls or anything. And I think, you know what, I'd rather have a few pieces that I'll wear all summer to weddings, and then a year and year and year and year in and out, than having loads of things. But I know
that... The older I get... that's how I shop now.
It is a luxury. It is a luxury to shop like that. And you know, I'm not perfect with my shopping habits, but I'm trying as and where I can afford it.
Oh well, I'm glad that dress came home with you. I can't wait to meet you. Like, you know,
I can't wait to meet you.
And then you stroll up in that dress, and I'll be like, yes, she's with me.
She's with me. What else have I done this week? Just before, I know, because you've had a big week, so I feel like I'm just going to have to...
When I rip that microphone off you, it's you're not getting it back.
Well, this is what I thought.
I've got to get it all out.
I might as well just kind of like air it all really quickly. So I also got my hair cut, which I was thrilled about. Very unexciting for the listener, but thrilling for me.
Tell us more. I love chatting about haircuts.
Oh, well, it was very long, and my hair's very fine. So the longer it gets, the thinner it gets. And it was really flat and really not great to style. And you only think, like, I've really wanted to go shorter for a really long time. And everyone's like, not before the wedding. But then I was just like, but I think it will make me happy if I go shorter before the wedding. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, I don't want to look back and think, oh, I wish I'd not waited. So I got my hair cut.
So many rolls.
I know. But it's like just a little bit below my collarbone, so it's not particularly short. But I feel like a new woman. I literally jumped out of the hairdressers, and I was kind of like doing the whole Hall & Oates dance down the street. I was like, I feel amazing.
You make my dreams come true.
I know. Honestly, I felt amazing.
The buzzer's gone off. The singing buzzer's gone off. How many minutes was that? Seven. Well done.
Not too bad. And I literally, my mum made me FaceTime her in the middle of like South Kensington, so I could show her my hair, and it wasn't that different, but it was just, that's how excited I felt by it. So that happened. And then last but not least, I had a wedding dress fitting. I had my second dress fitting.
Is this the final one, or have you got another one?
I have one more in a couple of weeks, and that's the one where I pick it up and take it home.
What are you going to do with it when you take it home? Where are you going to, like, I just feel like there's a lot of logistics there.
I don't know. That's the thing. I'm like, how do I get it home? And then I don't know where I'm going to put it in a house, because there's literally nowhere to put a wedding dress that is concealed.
Just thinking that.
So I think it might have to go to Joe's dad's house, because they've got wardrobe space that isn't occupied.
I love that. It's just so, where's your wedding dress? Oh, Joe's dad's house.
Yeah, I don't know
why. Because of the wardrobe space.
We have no wardrobe space. Not because it's filled up with clothes, just because we just haven't. The only, like, my wardrobes, I know you've seen them, but my wardrobes are like on, there's like, they're broken in half. So it's essentially got two levels for tops. So all my dresses are on the top bit, but have to be folded under. So it's not ideal for like full length things or coats or anything. Whereas Joe has the full length section of the wardrobe. Can't put my wedding dress in there.
Absolutely not. tell me how you felt. Were you, because obviously I imagine, because my wedding dress process is a bit different to yours, so I'm really interested that we've spoken about this, that you pick the wedding dress, you say yes to the dress, and then I just imagine doubt starts creeping in. So how did you feel when you went in for that fitting? Were you like, oh, actually, I quite like you?
Do you know what? I was a bit like, I felt amazing in it. I really love it. But I think naturally, being the kind of person I am, there is that pang of like, oh, should I have gone for something different? Should I have done something more like this or like that? And you do kind of get into that spiral, but you know how you feel in it. And when I tried it on it for the first time, my gut was like, yes. And I think you just have to trust your gut on the first time and not over-egg it. But I felt like since I'd had my hair cut, I felt really, really lovely in it. So I'm excited. I feel like when I've got it home, I feel like I'm going to have a couple of wears when I'm at home just to get used to it.
Oh, my God. I can't be there for that, because we've decided that we had a discussion, didn't we, about whether I wanted to know, whether you wanted to tell me, and I decided that I didn't want to know. So now it's got to the point where you don't want to tell me because I don't want to know. But I'd love to be a fly on the wall for that whole situation.
Maybe I'll just set up some cameras and film it for you, and then after the wedding I'll show you the footage.
Yeah, I'd like really want to see what you got up to in your dress. I mean, what are you doing? Loading the dishwasher?
I don't know, just like, you know, just maybe I'll do that after the wedding. Maybe I shouldn't load the dishwasher on it before.
Yeah, just kind of like stand there walking up and down stairs practicing.
Can you imagine the postman knocks? It's like, oh, I look like the bride of Mrs. Havisham or something.
Morning.
Hello. How has your week been anyway? Enough about me.
No, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. No, it's been good, but it's almost been 10 days. So I've deleted a few things that I've been up to and added in a few more exciting things that I've been up to. So it makes me sound like I've had a really glam time. I've just got back from the Lake District with Jack and June. We went on Monday and we got back last night. So we went for 3 nights. It's just the most beautiful place I've ever been.
It looked heavenly.
I can't believe I've never been. I asked my mum and dad just to check. I didn't want to say on the internet I've never been to the Lake District. And mum's like, remember that trip we went on when we were 7? But it doesn't seem like my kind of family's thing to do. It was such a nice time. On Wednesday, we kind of had like the perfect day. We walked a couple of minutes to this station, and then we went on a steam train. And then we went on a boat across Lake Windermere and we saw the mountains and they were like covered in snow, and we ate a packed lunch.
I know. I said to Joe, I was like, Joe, do you call it a pack up? And he went, what's a pack up? And I was like, fine. And I walked away.
Pack up.
It's definitely, that's probably a northern thing then, isn't it?
Well, apparently it's a Lincolnshire thing. Because I said pack up on my Instagram and everyone was like, what is a pack up?
Okay, fine.
I'm talking about a packed lunch, so, you know, sandwiches, sausage rolls, that kind of thing. And then we went, after we got off the boats, which was just amazing. We were on it for about 40 minutes. And on the way there, June was awake, but on the way back, she was asleep. So me and Jack got a table inside, got a cup of tea, had some cake from our pack up. It was just really lovely. But when we were in Windermere, we went to the Beatrix Potter Museum. And... oh, it was just the cutest thing I've ever seen, because it's so age appropriate for June, and she loves Peter Rabbit. So she kept walking around going, Peter Rabbit, which was cute. I mean, I thought it was cute. And basically, I bought the entire gift shop. Again, it was so age appropriate. I was like, June would love this. June would love that. And then before you knew it, they were like, that's £4 million, please. And I was like,
You're like, do you do loans?
Yeah. It was just really lovely, and it's made me, not many places make me want to go back. Like, I love Devon and Cornwall. I think they're beautiful. I love Norfolk. I've been there quite a lot, and obviously Kent. Well, we do actually go back to Kent quite a lot, but the Lake District, I want to go back, and I want to go back now. Like, I could happily settle there. In fact, Beatrix Potter's house, I'd take that, maybe give it a lick of a brilliant white paint. It was quite dark in there. And I think I could happily spend the rest of my days in the Lake District.
Oh, it looked absolutely gorgeous. I've never been, but no, it looked like beautiful.
Well, I was thinking about my hen do up there. We'll talk about that another time. But yeah, I spoke to one of my other friends, and she said it was one of her favourite places, and I was like, Hendu.
You're like, hello.
Yeah, so maybe. And then the other thing I did, which actually was almost a week previous now, but I went for afternoon tea at, I call it the Berkeley because that's how it's spelt. But I did ask the PR because I went for a free afternoon tea because my friend is the PR there. And it's called the Berkeley.
Oh, so yes.
I did ask her, but every time I say the Berkeley, Jack kind of rolls his eyes at me and I said, well, that's how they pronounce it.
He's like, you're very proper.
Yeah, but I went for their afternoon tea, which is called their Prêt-à-porter, and it's all inspired by the Dior exhibition, which is currently on at the V&A. And it was heavenly, absolutely heavenly. And it's what I like to call, they don't advertise it as such, but an all-you-can-eat afternoon tea.
Oh, I'm
which
not...
Which are the best kind.
They really are. I think when you're paying... quite a sum for an afternoon tea. It is nice to get a little doggy bag at the end.
It's all about the doggy bag. I mean, I want refills and doggy bags. And normally, like you say, afternoon teas are not cheap. And over the £40-ish mark, that's where you tend to get into the refill and the doggy bag situation.
You'd hope.
Well, you would for £40. I mean, I think that one's not heading into the 50s. But I mean, it's exceptional. At one point, so they've got the three tiers of cakes and they've got the Dior New Look jacket made into a cookie and then a Dior handbag. Oh, no, the Miss Dior perfume. And then the gentleman that was serving us like came over and then started spritzing all the cakes with this edible perfume. Like just when I thought I'd seen it all.
That is amazing.
I was like, what's he doing? She was like, oh, that's just, you know, edible perfume. I was like, cool, of course it is.
I wish all perfume was edible. I've learned the hard way.
Well, actually, I've got a Jo Malone perfume and it's basil and something. Every time I put it on, I think, pasta?
Maybe I'll pop a bit on the tongue. a bit of my passata at tea.
But yeah, so that was really, really lovely. I felt very, very fancy. So I've had some nice times, but like I said to you, not a complaint, but we're heading to market this weekend and I had a shoot in my house today, so I haven't even unpacked from the Lake District. I just put the suitcase on top of the wardrobe so it looked tidy. And it's just, I think the weekend after I'm going to need to sit down.
Oh, she's a jet setter.
I'm telling you, I might get a helicopter. It might be quicker.
That afternoon tea looks amazing. I've always wanted. Well, I've been to that afternoon tea years and years ago, but I really want to go to the Dior one because that exhibition is exceptional.
I went to the Berkeley probably about 10 years ago for the afternoon tea because they change it every season, don't they?
Yeah,
but I must say that is one of my favourite afternoon teas. And my other one, in fact, I'm going to ask you because I feel like you've got quite a lot of afternoon tea knowledge on your blog. What are your favourites?
I'd probably say one of my favourites is Sketch. It's definitely up there in terms of the cost of all the afternoon teas. But I feel like you go and you get the real experience. So you go into their pink Ramul, the David Shrigley artwork, and then sometimes they've got like a gospel choir singing or like a Christmas carolers. And then you have like, it's all refillable. You get a really gorgeous doggy bag. And it's just really lovely. And they kind of, at the beginning, they normally bring you over like a little, not like a canapé, but a couple of like mini startery bits, like picky things. Like, they're like one-offs. I don't know. Sometimes it's like caviar or something. So it's like really fancy and not something I'm a fan of, but you feel like you've really been spoiled. So I really love it there. That's like my number one for a real treat. But I also really love Liberty's afternoon tea. If you want something that feels really nice in like a bit of a London gem, but isn't as expensive, I think that's just over £20, which is obviously far more reasonable and more affordable, I think, but still doing something really lovely. But recently I did go to the Ned for afternoon tea. I was taken by a couple of my best friends and that was really lovely. I feel like the Ned's another one where you walk in and you feel like you're in this like parallel world of like another era. And that feels like such a treat as well. So they're my favourites at the moment. It always changes, but I've been very lucky to go to quite a few. It's more like something I do every birthday. So I've kind of like cashed in my tokens over the years. But I went to the Savoy a few years ago, which I did really like. But I think because the weather was really hot, I wasn't allowed to take a doggy bag or anything. And I think that, again, was really expensive. And my mum and I and my... Yeah, you were... No, because I think they, I think it was like a health and safety thing, because it was a really hot day. They were like, they couldn't be held responsible if the food had gone warm or it wasn't good or anything like that. And I was almost like, I want to take the risk. We've spent a lot of money.
Yeah, no, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Well, and that's the kind of situation, whereas if you'd known, you might have wrapped it in a napkin and put it in your bag.
No, I thought I could have just taken it anyway. But then once I've been told I can't do something, will not do something.
The same. I'm exactly the same. But I love sketch. But yeah, it's just going back to what you said. I feel like, so I was looking for pictures for Mother's Day, and there's just you know how the iPhone does face recognition. So I went on pictures of my mum, and it's just me taking pictures of my mum in front of cakes. we do it like every birthday, well, not every birthday, but you know, at least once in the year for either birthday or Christmas or Mother's Day or something, we'll go for afternoon tea. So that was quite interesting, going through our afternoon teas. I really
favorite.
Well, I really rate sketch. I mean, it is the best, but bloody hell, it's pricey. I remember when my mum and I went there, we didn't even have a glass of champagne, which is unheard of. I was like, I think we're all right with just the tap water. Thanks, Trevor. It is pricey, but they do. I mean, I must have had 3 refills of the sandwiches. So I was like, you can keep them coming. Really, really love it. And obviously, you know, you have fun in the toilets. Like, it's just generally a wonderful experience. But I also really like Betty's, Northern Base. Their afternoon tea is lovely, and they have an afternoon tea level, like, especially in the one in York. So you can go into the cafe, but the one thing about Betty's is you can't book, and often it's quite busy in the summer, so it's quite nice to book the afternoon tea, and you go up to the first floor, and it's all just lovely. I also rate, and also not necessarily, I mean, you shouldn't really say that, should you, but I've done 2 afternoon tea tours on buses. I did one in Dublin and one in London.
I've done one of those in London.
Let me just have a look. So Bee's Afternoon Tea Bus, which is part of Bee Bakery, not to be confused with Bee's Bakery, that goes on a red double-decker bus. And let me just check the one in Dublin Afternoon Tea Bus, because the Dublin one, oh, that's what it's called in Dublin. It's called the Vintage Tea Tours. That was exceptional. And the historical facts were also very good.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. So afternoon tea on a bus is definitely, in a city like, you know, London or Dublin, I wouldn't really want to do it, I don't know, on the M25.
I don't know if they take a bus along. Do you know what I'm saying? I've been on a bus along the motorway and it wasn't my favourite experience. I think I was coming down to Margate, actually.
And I think that's it for my afternoon teas. I'm always open to trying another one. But I do want to try that one at the Ned that you had, because that looked gorgeous.
I mean, we love a trip to the Ned, don't we?
Not in any way sponsored by the Ned.
You've only been once.
I went after we went that time in January. I went the next, like, 4 days later.
I mean, I did go the week before Mother's Day with my mum. I took her for a pedicure as well, because I was like, it was amazing.
But yeah, we've always paid for our time at the Ned. We just really like it.
We would gladly not pay for our time at the Ned, though.
Maybe this podcast could be the resident Ned podcast.
I mean, I'm just going to throw it out there. No, I'm joking. We love paying. shall we move on? Shall we move on to Teletalk?
First of all, I've got a public service announcement. I promised I wasn't going to talk about This Is Us, but This Is Us Season 2 is now available on Amazon Prime. You don't have to pay £20 for it. So that's the end of my public service announcement, and I won't talk about it anymore. The other thing that I have been watching, sorry, got really distracted then, is that I've been watching Pose on BBC Two, which is...
Oh, you mentioned this.
I probably chatted to you about it when we crashed on Monday, but it's about the ball culture in the 1980s in New York, at the height of the AIDS epidemic. That's the kind of synopsis in a nutshell. But it's got... I loved episode 1, and I was like, this is incredible. But then I started to think, oh, I just need to check if the cast is as diverse as the stories that they're portraying, because obviously, you know, that's just so important in 2019 that if you're going to be playing somebody from the LGBTQ community, that they're actually hiring those people. And apparently it is the biggest, well, in the BBC press room, which I've just got the webpage up here, it said they're making history, and Pose features the largest cast of transgender actors in series regular roles, as well as the largest reoccurring cast of LGBTQ actors for a scripted series. So I fully would recommend it, not just because of that, but it's so good. I've only watched two episodes so far, and it's kind of got the glitz and the glamour, but also some of the stories, and they're just really, really sad, really heartbreaking. But it's a really great series. And I think the first episode was really long. It was an hour and 15 minutes, I think. Mm-hmm. And then I've got I haven't watched episode two, so I've got episode two to watch. And there's eight episodes.
Oh, that sounds, you know, I'm really, really think that sounds brilliant. I'm going to give that a watch.
Yeah.
I promise.
Looking forward to, I think Jack's going away for a job very, very soon, which I'm glad, because I've got a lot of telly to catch up on that we don't watch together. He was actually he was writing the script when I had Pose on, and he kept like looking up, and then by the end of it he just shut his laptop and was like, I'm fully involved, what's happening?
Oh my god, I love a new series. I say that I'm still pootling behind, but it does sound really good.
I'm concerned about you. Do you finish series or do you just start them?
I mean, I'm good at starting them. I'm less good at finishing them.
I feel like if we actually wrote down all the series that you started and not to finish.
No, because that would be too embarrassing.
No, it's fine. It's fine. As long as, you know, we're watching TV, that's the main thing. What have you been watching?
Well, this week I watched the next episode of Married at First Sight, which is one of my favourite things.
How's it going?
Good. I feel like the two couples the two couples they're featuring should have been paired with each other instead.
Oh, really?
I feel like they got it around the wrong way.
Could you do a wife swap Married at First Sight hybrid?
I feel like that is where it could be heading.
Well, you never know.
But I love it. I'm really invested in it. I really like Jonathan, but I don't think it's going to work out with him and, is it Stephanie? But I really, really love Verity, who is the lady in the other couple. I think she's absolutely wonderful. So I'm just really enjoying it. It's just a really nice, like, it's like a proper hump day watch when you're feeling a bit like out of sorts midweek. It's the thing that I always kind of go, oh yeah, I forgot this was on tonight. And I get really excited.
I love that. Yeah, that feeling when there's nothing on and then you're like, oh God, no, actually there is. Married at First Sight's on or whatever it is, and you get all excited.
I know, it's like my favourite thing. So I watched that, which was great. And then last week, literally, wasn't this time last week, it was last Thursday, I went to the cinema with Joe, and I went to see probably my first ever proper scary film.
No, I mean, I don't know why you're laughing, because I've not watched a scary film, so I think this is completely...
Okay,
fine. I think it's big and brave of you.
Thank you. Basically, we had a free evening. My grandparents had Maggie, and we never really have evenings where we just don't have any kind of responsibility. So I was like, well, why don't we go to the cinema? And Joe was like, okay, I'll check what's on. I think what was on was, it was Aftermath with Keira Knightley, which Joe then looked up reviews, and apparently the reviews haven't been brilliant. So he was like, I'll leave it up to you kind of thing. And then there was Captain Marvel as well, which isn't really my bag. So that wasn't really in the question. Then there was Us. I haven't seen Get Out. That's always been something I've meant to see, like a lot of things, but I hadn't seen it. And it's directed by the same guy, which is Jordan Peele.
Oh, sorry. You've got the facts. I was here with the facts ready. You had them.
I know. You had the facts ready and you didn't need them.
Sorry. Apologies. Carry on.
So I asked on Instagram, I was like, will I find it really, really scary? Because I had no confidence, but the reviews were really good. Like the IMDb was like 7.4, it had 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. So I was like, okay. And then I was like literally doing that thing where you read reviews. So I was like looking at Mark Kermode's reviews. I was like on every website trying to get reviews. And I was like, it seemed really good. So I was like, let's just book it. And a lot of people were like, oh, it's quite scary. Some people like it's jumpy, it's gory. Some people like it's not jumpy. So I was like, Liv, just suck it up and do it because it's the only, like, it made the most sense because it was the one that had the best write-up. So I was like, okay, let's...
You could suck it up. I'm looking at the poster. I'm terrified.
Oh, no, well, that's the thing. The poster, I hadn't seen the trailer or anything, so I had nothing to go by. And Joe was like, if it's anything like Get Out, it'll be absolutely fine. So I was like, okay. And then we got to the trailers. And just the trailers were horrific. And like, just because they were all obviously like real scary trailers. There was Pet Sematary, which is the new film. Oh my God, why am I like this? But is it, what's the scary writer?
Sorry, I don't know. I've not watched a horror film ever.
No, it's based on a book by...
Stephen King?
Yes.
Oh, no, he's the only scary writer I know.
Yes, it's Stephen King. I was like, yeah, but that looked really scary. And then there was another one, which I didn't even remember the name of because it just looked so, like, terrifying. So they just didn't gear me up for anything. But the film, we both came out and I was like, what did you think? And Joe was like, I don't know. And I just, it was really scary. I think a lot of the scariness was in my head because I was constantly anticipating things that could happen, which I know is about, like, is almost what a lot of scary films play up to because they're kind of, like, waiting for you to... kind of interpret what might go on, if that makes sense.
I wish you could see my face. I've just seen the words funhouse, doppelganger and hall of mirrors.
Yep. Nah, so basically that's how I'd sum it up in a line. Like, yeah, like a scary film about doppelgangers. I feel like if I was coming at it from a really analytical point of view, like a real, like, me being an art student having to analyze a painting and find meaning in it, I think it did cover some, like, important messages. And I think you could really kind of, it would make for a really great dissertation piece or really great essay on, like, the things it unpicks.
Well, I've just seen, and I didn't know this, and forgive me, but I didn't realise that Jordan Peele was produced Black Klansman. So, I mean, and then I've just read a brief synopsis about the film Get Out, and I can see how it could all, you know, it could be covering some really important topics.
Yes, I feel like it does. I mean, I feel like primarily it is just quite scary, but I do feel like it covers some interesting topics as well. But I feel like I was so scared that I wasn't really focusing on them.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, my eyebrows have been furrowed for nearly 5 minutes while you've been talking about this. But I'm glad that we're looking at some new TV for us because we do tend to watch the same genre, but I'm gonna have to close this, honestly. That it's I'm terrified.
Yeah, the poster's quite scary as well. It's put me off cutting anything ever again, ever.
Oh no, absolutely not for me.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row, dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
After Teletalk, we have a guest this week, which is very, very exciting, very overdue. But this week we have my friend Genevieve Richardson, who is currently interning with an MP in Parliament. And we wanted to bring her along to basically debunk some Brexit and political myths and almost talk about politics on a really digestible level. Because if you've watched the news or if you haven't watched the news in the last few weeks, I think it's become a real kind of minefield of knowledge and it's become quite intimidating and quite scary to feel like you know or don't know anything about politics. So we wanted to have a guest on that perhaps doesn't have endless political degrees, but is someone like us who has a really extensive breadth of knowledge, but is able to communicate in a way that isn't intimidating and makes it feel really accessible, which is what I think politics should really be about. So yeah, without further chatter, let me introduce our interview with my friend Genevieve Richardson. So today we have a very special guest on the line. That is my wonderful friend and also political correspondent for this week, Genevieve Richardson, who I've known for many, many years, but also I feel like this week has just, in the last couple of weeks, I mean, I've known you've been really politically savvy for a really long time, but I think over the last couple of weeks when it has been particularly testing in especially Britain in terms of politics, you have really kind of debunked a lot of things on social media. And basically what we wanted to have you in for is just have a really candid chat about kind of Brexit and kind of just being able to get your head around politics if you're not particularly political, which is a lot of peas. Pop.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. We're very happy to have you on here. But we've basically, I think, I don't know about Charlotte, but I feel like politics at the moment is so overwhelming and it changes. I mean, at the moment, when we record, everything we say will be relevant, but give it a couple of hours, it might outdate very quickly. So the turnaround hopefully will be quite quick.
I know. I mean, I'm away at the moment. I'm away from Parliament at the moment. And I think everything's changed since I've left.
I know. I was
just
talking
24 hours ago.
I know, that's the thing. I was actually having a conversation with my mum and then she was like, but has this not changed? And I was like, maybe it has.
I feel at the moment that politics is so overwhelming that I try and keep up with it. And my boyfriend Jack's really been keeping up with it to the point that he has like live, like news streaming all the time. And I've actually had to like ban the B word on like, when it's too much. And I'm like, honestly, Jack, I can't listen to another thing. And I feel like a lot of people might be getting that way. And obviously, like, I never would, because it's such a privilege, you know, to have the right to vote and be able to follow politics. But I just think at the moment it's particularly overwhelming. It's particularly testing. And that's, yeah, when Liv said, you know, let's get Genevieve on, I was like, yes, please, just for my own sanity, because it very much makes you want to walk away from politics and be like, well, it's nothing to do with me. I don't know how to help. I don't even know what's going on. Just forget about it. I'm going to go have a cup of tea and 74 biscuits. Maybe that's me.
I eat a lot of biscuits to get through the day. It's so overwhelming. And people keep saying to me that, you know, I'm so lucky to be working in Parliament at the moment, which is true. But it's also, I'm just worried for the state of our country, most of all. So if this could not be happening, I'd also like that.
As a young person, like, how did you first get into politics? Because I think there's like a lot of people that would really like to, but would have a foggy where to begin, because I think it's just the whole word in itself is just like, oh God, I don't know how to deal with it. Don't know how to get in. Forget it.
I know. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done on our institutions to make it more accessible. And actually, I have a story about how I got into politics and how I nearly didn't get into it, which is that I did work experience in sixth form at some point, political kind of work experience. And I was working with this another work experience person, a young guy who was able to just wax lyrical about everything political. And I'd come at the politics angle being really interested in just social issues and stuff like that. And he just knew so much about kind of the intricacies of politics. And I felt really put off. And I just actually said to them, I don't want to do this. I just don't know enough. And it's taken me nearly a decade, really, to actually think about why that might be. I think, you know, he was privately educated. And I think you get a lot of confidence from having a private education a lot of the time, perhaps the confidence of being a man. And it's taken me all this time to actually think, you know what, even if I don't know so much about all the intricacies of politics, I actually care about the issues that face people every day. So I think that it's more important to go in at that angle than the other angle. I think people would rather have a politician who cares about them than we have a lot of great politicians, than somebody who just is a career politician.
Completely. And especially someone that you'd rather someone that cares about, like you say, social issues and like what people actually want, opposed to knowing words and what that textbook definitions of things mean, because that's lovely. But, and I know you know those things too, but equally it's actually having someone who's just genuinely in touch with what's relevant and what's needed, and far more than just being able to be like, I have it all going on up here kind of thing.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm still learning a lot about what's going on in Parliament, because there's so, I mean, they have a glossary. I would recommend that you go on the Parliament glossary if you're interested, because there are so many strange words for everything.
I feel like this is going to help me so much. So is that available on the government website, or just like if you just Google Parliament
glossary? Yeah, it's the Parliament website, not the government website.
Right, I see. Yeah, because sometimes I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I really want to understand, but you've just said seven words, and I know,
and I think that's why there needs to be a change. You know, I don't think you should need a degree in politics, which I don't have, by the way, to understand politics, because it's not democratic. You have to have the people who are voting understanding it. Otherwise, it doesn't work, does it? And I think Brexit's really showing that.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I feel when I watch Line of Duty, like all their like police terms. Like, I've just learned what like AC means, and I forgot.
They're not air conditioner.
Air conditioner 12. But even then, I'm like, I feel like you need to know police words to understand that, and it takes two series to get into, but this is real life.
I know, and that's actually just what made me want to try to break things down, because I thought, I struggle to understand. How is anybody who's working outside, most people, meant to understand? That's what really made me want to try to explain things.
So what did you do your degree in, if you don't mind me asking? And then what was the steps that kind of got you interested? Well, I know you've kind of covered that bit, but, you know, how did you get into it?
My degree was actually in French and Spanish. And then I did a master's in international development. And I felt like I didn't want to do something to do with overseas stuff. I wanted to do something about British issues and stuff like that. And I looked at working for an MP, and I applied for loads of jobs directly with MPs, but I just heard nothing back. And then I heard about this internship, which I'm now on, called the Speaker's Parliamentary Placement Scheme. And it's been running for 8 years, and it's trying to diversify Parliament, basically. So you don't need a degree, even though I do have one. And you can be any age to apply. And so it's a really good scheme, actually, because it tries to address this very issue, which is that young people do want to work in politics, but they can't get into it because it's so competitive, and often it's about who you know. So I'm lucky to be on this internship, really.
And how long have you been doing it for?
About 6 months, and still there's just so much to learn, really.
I'm still just thinking, could I do it? When you said any age, I was like, well, maybe I'll do it.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, I think it tries to make it accessible for people who might want to change careers. Not saying that you should, but that is actually what it tries to be accessible to that, which is great, because I think a lot of people work in areas that might be connected to politics, like health or education, who might want to go into something political, which is great because they have all that experience of having worked in that kind of sector.
That's so interesting. That's it, and that's what's so needed, is people who have that real experience to kind of really like change that landscape of politics. Because you're like, so often you hear about politicians who just are, I mean, I suppose the phrase that's bandied around is out of touch. Anything.
Exactly.
It does become like that, and that's what makes it so difficult. But one of the things we wanted to ask is just about the day to day, which just briefly touching on it, because I think we're both so interested. I mean, I know, because I came to visit you, which was so exciting at work.
You did. You came through the security.
The proper Parliament security. And we got to have lunch, and I was like looking for people. I was like, oh, I recognise people. It was just very exciting. I feel like even when I'm watching the news, they're on by the river. What's the outdoorsy bit near the restaurant called?
Oh, the terrace.
It's
just called the terrace. I know. It's just called the terrace.
Is that on the parliamentary glossary?
Oh, it might be. It might be.
You know, you work alongside Catherine West, who is an MP, and I'd love to know, like, we just basically quickly want to touch on what the day-to-day entails, because I think that's really interesting as well, like being a fly on the wall in your
own. Definitely. It's quite varied, actually. my main job is to deal with post and emails. So I help draft responses to constituents who might write in about anything from Brexit or a lot, because in Catherine's constituency, 75% of her constituents voted to remain. So they're very angry about everything, understandably. Or it could be about a personal problem, like a problem with your landlord, and that's called processing casework. So I do a bit of that, but mainly I deal with what's called the policy correspondence, which is all of the sort of wider issues that aren't personal issues. So I help draft letters to constituents and to departments. Often I'll raise things with different departments. I also conduct research for briefings and speeches. For example, I researched the impact of Brexit on the fashion industry, which was quite interesting because I like fashion, because Catherine was doing a Sky News interview about the fashion industry and Brexit. I recently did some research about knife crime, because obviously that's a huge problem at the moment. And then I also manage her Instagram, which is, you know, exciting. There are no flat lays, but...
Disappointing.
Which is... I don't know what there would be of.
You could maybe get like policy and then laminate it and then like put it on some fabric and then like drape a rose over it.
I was going to say some peonies perhaps, or a diptyque candle.
A diptyque, I did actually do a flat lay once of some letters from some year six students, obviously far away, because we do get some from children, which is nice. Some letters, a lot about the environment. Yeah, and I help draft blog posts and articles, and I also do something called tabling questions. Here's something else that you need a glossary for. So MPs will either ask an oral question in the House of Commons or a written question, and it's called tabling questions. I don't know why it's called tabling rather than just asking questions, but I help do that because they have to be worded in a certain way, and if they're not worded in a certain way, they get carded, which means it's wrong. It's like a referee, red card. You've done it wrong. You need to reword it. So often it's a bit like a freedom of information request, because the MP might want to know how much a department is spending on X, or they might want to know the impact of something, such as to find out information. And then something else I'm leading on, which is exciting, is a summer school, which Catherine is hosting for 16 to 19 year olds in the constituency, so I'm helping to organise that, which is really great because it's doing a similar thing to my internship, which is trying to give experience to young people who might not come from very privileged backgrounds and give them a taste of what Parliament's like and what local government's like.
I think I need to come to this. It's a shame I'm 13 years over the age limit.
A lot of people have been like, I'm too old.
That's so exciting though, and it shows there's such a gap for that, and there is such a want.
So, because I had another friend who I think did a similar position to you, just by kind of what you're explaining on your day to day. And when it comes to writing to your local MP, you know, would you say, like, do those letters help Catherine or any MP like shape kind of, you know, as you say, the constituency she is looking after her borough. Because I imagine some people just like, well, it's a waste of time. I'm not going to write to my MP.
No, I don't. I get it, and I think that it's definitely worth writing to your MP, because particularly if you are writing and a number of other people are writing on a specific issue, the same issue, that can sort of influence the MP to actually. Like, oh, okay, this might be something that I should take in to Parliament. So yeah, definitely. I mean, Catherine's working on stuff to do with the living wage, trying to make sure that everyone is paid, in London is paid the London living wage, and that was already on her radar, but definitely constituents writing in really helped.
That's so interesting. I remember when Gina Martin like put forward her upskirting campaign, and I wrote to my local MP, and I got a reply, and obviously that felt like I was doing something, albeit very small. But I think if you say if a lot of people do it, then it's like, hey, we have a problem with this thing.
Exactly. Gina Martin's actually Catherine's constituent.
Ah.
Which is quite cool. Yeah. And yeah. And it's like with the Article 50 petition, we had loads of people emailing saying, I've signed it. And that's great, because it just indicates to Catherine what her constituents are doing.
Oh, interesting.
Already this has been enlightening, and we've only been talking for 15 minutes. I feel like in the 15 minutes I've learnt more than in 32 years of watching them all on telly.
Well, yeah, you just wish that you got taught this in school. I think I really wish that we were taught this in school.
Do you think it's like that thing that you were talking about earlier, that kind of private education, and I'm not dissing anybody dissing.
No, I know what you mean.
But do, like, it's almost like it's almost a system designed to keep certain people out, which it probably is. I don't know. Maybe I'm just...
It is, unfortunately. It's not one of those things where, you know, we're being conspired against or something. It's not like that. But by sort of accident, you are being left out, if I think. And particularly because, for example, at my school, they didn't offer politics A-level. At a lot of state schools, they don't. At a lot of private schools, they do. And obviously, that excludes people. But I think that it should be part of the curriculum, you know, part of PSHE or something.
I think a lot of things, because I always notice now as a parent, I'm like, oh, they should teach that in school. Or, and then actually, me and Jack have had the discussion of, no, they should teach it at home. Like, that's like, school's not there to educate your child on everything. You know, a lot of it does have to be the parents. But I think something like politics, it's very difficult for the parents to teach it, because if they don't understand it, whereas, you know, other things, the parents can teach it, you know, even if they don't know about it, they can probably educate themselves with politics. Definitely think that should be on the curriculum. And it wasn't at my school. Like, just, no. We had yeah, RE. That was about as far as it went.
I have a funny story about this as well, actually, which is that I wrote an essay for some sort of competition. I can't really remember what it was to do with, but you had to answer the question of how to get more young people involved in politics. And I wrote the essay on the fact that there should be education on politics. And I got a response saying that I've been unsuccessful because my idea would result in indoctrination. And I thought, I don't think so, because if you're sensitive about it, then I think you can teach politics. You're always going to be biased. That's the difficulty. But I did a great history module. I think Liv did it as well, on British politics.
Yes.
Loved that. That was loved great. And our teacher was quite left-wing, so it was a bit biased. But I think you could go about it in a way that you're not even talking about the politics, really. You're just talking about how Parliament works, how, you know, how many MPs there are, how elections work, you know, just stuff like that. I think you could definitely teach that in citizenship without being biased.
That's the thing. I did that. And I just think, I look back on those lessons, I think I don't even know what kind of, like, side leaning that my history teacher was. And obviously I can't remember. Like, there was no, I'm trying to think now. I was just thinking, did he say any? I mean, he may have done, but there was nothing that meant I came away thinking, oh, he's definitely like a Tory or definitely lefty, or like, it was very much a kind of like neutral ground, which, although I didn't like him as a teacher because he made me so anxious, which is another issue, but I'd loved those lessons. I felt I came away and I felt quite educated about like the political system, which should I have had to wait until I was over kind of like a voting age to know about that?
No, I know, it's really bad. Yeah, I mean, I think you should learn it from quite an early age, you know, year seven. And it doesn't have to be too political. It just has to be, these are the parties, these are their main beliefs, in a sort of, you know, as that, and that's the only place where it could become a bit biased. But I think you can try to go about it in a way that is as neutral as possible.
I was just going to say, I feel like this ties really nicely into like actually talking about politics online and like now in the present day, because I think it is so overwhelming and difficult to know which sources to trust and it's to where to get your information from, because I think politics online has seemingly become something that's really opinion-based opposed to fact-based, and it can become like a weird space of different grey areas, when actually, like, there's lots of parties that have their policies. Okay, I don't know how much people deliver on them, but it can become so difficult to actually establish your own opinion when you can often become trapped in a bit of an echo chamber. So I was just quite interested to know, kind of, obviously, what you've been doing the last couple of weeks of Brexit is you've kind of been debunking, breaking it down to the kind of normal everyday person about what's going on in Parliament, in a way that's quite digestible. And I'm really interested to know how you kind of know and which sources to trust, and how you kind of can gather your opinion based on what's going on. Because I find that I sit on the BBC and that's kind of it, because I don't really know where else to go, because obviously a lot of places are so kind of centred around their own kind of political beliefs that it can, you know, even if you have your own political beliefs, you still want something that's like, right, what's actually going on?
Yeah, I think that that's such a good question, particularly in the age of social media, because that everyone has an opinion and everyone puts it out there, and it could be, as you know, it could be fake news.
Oh god, but that's it, that's a thing, and that's people say that as well, and you're like, oh,
it's like, what do you say? But then I think that what's great about social media is the fact that people are able to scrutinize each other. So, you know, somebody might tweet something, and then somebody else, or maybe like 10 people, will reply saying, well, that's not quite right, and then they might link to why it's not right. And I think that's a great part of social media. It allows everyone to kind of interact with each other. But more broadly about knowing which sources to trust, I mean, I've been guilty in the past of only sticking to certain sources. And I think in my job, I've actually got better at reading a variety of sources, because sometimes I just can't find it on one paper, like The Guardian, my love. And I would definitely recommend trying to read a variety of sources, which you can do quite easily on your phone. I'm selling the iPhone now, on the news app, because it comes from different newspapers. But that's kind of like because you can't read 5 newspapers a day. I'd recommend not reading everything from, you know, the Morning Star to the Daily Mail, but more like the more moderate papers, like The Guardian, The Times, The Telegraph, The Independent, BBC. I think they're all good standing points, because they're, or starting points, because they all are biased, but in theory the BBC shouldn't be, but it's hard not to be, but they all kind of cover more of a moderate ground. I would also say that watching the news is great, because there's often a lot of interrogation, particularly the Channel 4 news, which is, it is more left-leaning, but they tend to interrogate their guests more, they tend to interrogate their politicians more than on like the BBC or something. And I think that's quite useful, because you can just, they try to get to the heart of what's going on. But also what's important is to have context, and you kind of need to know a bit about the history to understand the present. And I would really recommend watching Andrew Marr's History of Modern Britain, if you can find it. It's a 5-part series. It charts the history of, from the end of the war, from Clement Attlee being Prime Minister, to 2007. And it includes a lot about Northern Ireland, which is really relevant to everything that's happening with Brexit, up to 2007. And I would really recommend that if you want to know more about politics, because it just sets everything in context. And it's just like, oh, okay, this is why this person is mad and this other person is also mad. And another thing I'd recommend is following the Twitter accounts of the House of Commons and Commons Library. Those are their handles. Because you may not know about the House of Commons Library. It's trying to not just help people who work in Parliament, but also everyone by providing unbiased research.
Oh, that's really interesting.
It's really handy. And you can, and it, if you go on their Twitter accounts, they just give you really up-to-date information about everything that's going on, and it's really simple, and nobody's talking in nonsense language.
So that's really the thing. So often you watch these programs, and people, I mean, I think it's quite a renowned thing with politicians, but no one answers questions. in a really simple way.
Yes, Jack and I were watching the TV last night, and because like we were on a mini break, so we were sat down like quite early, and the news was on, and somebody asked an MP, they were like, "Oh, well, you know, how do you think Brexit's affected the country?" And rather than just say, "Oh, well, yeah, it's probably been a bit shit, hasn't it? Like we've actually put everyone under a lot of pressure," he just went off on one, and he didn't even answer the question. And I was like, if you just sympathise with everybody. I don't know. It just like almost feels like that, like a lot of politicians that you see on the TV just don't have a heart, or are just so not in touch with what's happening. So it's really nice to listen to a few things that you've suggested to actually get the information that you need. And do you think it's one of those things as well? It's a bit like a muscle that you exercise, you know, when you go to the gym, and obviously the more you absorb and the more you try and understand it, you know, hopefully in like 6 months time, you'll be like, oh, right. Yeah. Makes loads of sense.
Exactly. You have to get used to what they're talking about. When I've been doing my stories, it's really forced me to get into the nitty gritty, because sometimes I'll read an article and I kind of, in my head, I'm like, yeah, I understand this. And I think a lot of people do this. But then when I'm trying to explain it, I'm like, well, what does that mean? And I have to keep, you know, digging deeper. And that's when I found it really useful to use a variety of sources. Do you know what I would recommend? CBBC Newsround. Nothing wrong with that.
Yes.
Simple.
Great idea.
Talking in complex language is often seen as like the favourable thing, or it's meant
the
to grown be superior.
Up thing.
Exactly. But what's really the most intelligent thing to do is to present things in a simple way. And I think sometimes within journalism, within politics, within all these kind of middle class, upper class activities, people get very bogged down in sounding clever.
And embellishing these things too, in a way that's like, I know words. And it's
exactly,
like, cool,
yeah.
You know words.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's more important to know things than words, I think. And I've had that in so many situations where I've been in an, you know, inverted commas, adult situation. Even, for example, when we were looking to get a mortgage, and I had to say to like the estate agent or the mortgage advisor, sorry, and I was just like, but can you just talk to me as if I'm an alien and I've just landed on Earth and I've no idea what is going on, because I won't know what these things mean.
I know. And why does it have to be so complicated? Who came up with any of these words that are different to regular words?
I know. And I just think so many people just think, oh God, I feel stupid. Like, and I do feel stupid a lot. And I don't know, like maybe if we analysed it further, I've got pretty average GCSEs. I've got pretty shitty A-levels, 2 Ds and an E. And I quit art college. So whilst I am quite intelligent, it's very easy. And it's that kind of going back to that kind of self-belief thing. But if you see something on the telly sometimes and you're just like, I keep making this noise, don't I? That's my politics noise. You just think, oh, do you know what? I'm not going to have anything to do with it. And actually, if we all were a bit more politically focused, you know, and doing certain things, you know, maybe we can all come together for the greater good. Maybe that's my hippie ideals coming through.
Yeah, I think that so many people feel like that. And I felt like that in this experience with the work experience that I did. And in hindsight, I just feel like that's not my fault, and it's not people's fault for not understanding. It really is the fact that we have to change our institutions, because in a democracy, it's just not right that people don't feel like they can understand, and that they feel like they can, that they should just give up because they're not clever enough, or that they don't know enough. That's what I would say to people who feel like they don't know enough. It's just not their fault, and they should do what they can to try to understand, but also recognise that there's a lot of work that Parliament should be doing and is actually doing to try to make it more accessible. Like, Parliament has a great education hub and they do a lot of workshops and school trips and stuff like that, which is great because that didn't exist when we were kids. So they are actually doing a lot to show people that this is your Parliament. This isn't just some palace in the middle of London where all these people argue. This is actually for you.
What would you say to a young person who is looking to get into politics potentially but is too scared, for lack of a better word?
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. And I would say nobody is as clever as you think they are, first of all. And questioning yourself is good in some measure because it means that you're reflective. So keep that on board. And in terms of practical things, I'd say that getting involved in sort of local things, community things, is really great. Like if you are a party political, then getting involved with your party at a local level, campaigning. But if you don't feel like you're political, then to get involved with a charity or something like that and volunteer. And I would say to write a blog or get on Twitter and share your opinion. I think what's great about social media, again, is that you can share your opinion like that. But I think that you have to have the attitude that you do deserve to be involved as a young person.
Yeah, completely. I think as well, do you know what I always think? Learning, like, I read a really great piece in Stylist recently about the art of debate and actually kind of not being too frightened of discussion and debate, because I think that's another thing we're so invested in, like, cancel culture if someone gets something wrong. And I think it's really important to be able to debate things and discuss things and know you're not always right. But if you're not right, being able to listen and be able to say, do you know what, you've got a really fair point there. Because I think we're so quick to go, you are not educated, you do not know, and just kind of be like, that's it, unfollow, instead of just saying, okay, let me see what your way of thinking.
Totally. And how much of that is to do with being a woman, I wonder? I think particularly with this experience I had with this guy, I think that was a lot to do with the sort of male confidence thing. And that's a real shame. And so, yeah, I think it's totally okay to admit that you're still learning and that it's a work in progress. And when you are having a discussion, if somebody is just like, oh, you don't know anything, well, they're just not good. They're just not a good debater, are they?
They are just not good for you.
I think Jamila Jamil actually talked about this quite well, to do with feminism. It is a work in process. It's never too late to just say that you were wrong. But I think everyone is afraid of saying that they're wrong. It's really hard.
It's so hard, but there's so much power in it as well. There's so much power in saying, do you know what? I've not always got it right, but I'm really, really happy to learn and educate myself.
I think if everyone could adopt that sort of attitude and also be kind to each other and kind to others when they don't know things and not laugh at them and things like that.
It's never too late to become interested in anything like politics, or I don't know, it's politics should be something that I think is open to everyone as well, and it shouldn't be too intimidating for anyone.
Absolutely. It really shouldn't. It really is. I think it's just vital that everyone feels like it's theirs, because that's the whole point of politics. It's to do with the people. If we're going to go etymology heavy, it's to do with the people.
I love that.
And at the moment, it's not. I don't know what the opposite of that is in Latin, but
I don't know.
Just mentioned the word etymology followed by Latin. I just had to Google the word etymology just in case any other Fringe of It listeners out there are feeling a bit worried. There might be some Fringe of It listeners out there rolling their eyes going, oh my God, I had no idea.
Don't bring up Latin. Don't bring up Latin.
What does it mean?
Well, thank you so much, Genevieve. Honestly, I feel like I just know how to tackle this now, because
oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to go and write some letters.
I know. Honestly, as well, if you don't follow Jenny, well, I keep saying Jenny because, I mean, we're just super familiar. But if you don't follow Genevieve, do go and follow, because her stories are brilliant at kind of breaking down week on week in Brexit. Very AOC, who we love. And she's just really great at kind of, you know, bringing you back to the bare bones of what's going on in a really non-scary way. So definitely follow her too.
Thank you. That it was very much inspired by AOC showing us around Congress and stuff.
Oh, you are the British AOC.
I just need to get my suit game.
I know.
We'll put Genevieve's Instagram, we'll link it in the show notes so you can find it there. And I'm not going to say anything about Brexit, because God knows where we'll be this time next week.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having
me. Take care, Genevieve. Bye bye.
Take care. Bye.
We really hope you enjoyed that chat with Genevieve. I'm feeling pretty fired up, and less like an idiot, which is generally what politics makes me feel like a lot. So we really hope that you got something from it too. We will be back next week and we will have recorded an in-store recording with H&M on the launch of their Conscious collection. So we'll be talking with a couple of guests about sustainability and the fashion industry. So we can't wait for you to hear that. And in the meantime, head over to our Facebook group facebook.com/groups/ The Fringe of It. And if you would like to subscribe and rate us, that will help other people find us. So thank you so much for listening and we'll speak to you all very soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.